Blog Talk Radio.
You think the people of this country exist to provide you with position. I think your position exists to provide those people with freedom.
All right, everybody, it's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. Couldn't resist playing that old clip. You know, I like that one. Mel Gibson in that movie, Braveheart. You remember that? And I think that's something that our elected officials need to be reminded of, because they certainly behave just the way they're being portrayed in that clip. They believe that their position is there to provide them with power, when in fact, their whole existence is to provide you and I with freedom. That's the whole point of government. That's the whole point of our government. Or it used to be, or at least that was the theory we were told. But as we see things progress, as we see things progress, it's more and more clear every day that the government believes that you and I are nothing more than human resources. Resources to be mined and tapped for your current and future productivity. That's exactly what's going on. You take the case in point of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare as it's being called. Those of you that pay attention and follow the show know that I've spoken about Richard Nixon back in 74 trying to put up the very same program. Not exactly the same, mind you, but pretty doggone close. See, the Republicans back then, well, they determined that, and only in America is this possible, folks, they determined that an employer and individual mandate for you to purchase health insurance is a free market solution. Only in America could being forced to purchase a product be considered a free market solution. Yes, exactly, Miss Linda. And, you know, Obama, rightfully so, called out Romney during the debates about Romney Care and the fact that the individual mandate actually came from everybody's favorite constitutional bulwark, the Heritage Foundation. Of course, the Heritage Foundation quickly distanced themselves from the individual mandate that they first proposed, saying they'd changed their mind and realized it was unconstitutional. I wonder, will they rush back to support it again now that the Supreme Court has agreed that it is actually constitutional after all? Somehow, I doubt we'll see that. But this whole ACA, Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is not designed to make your trips to the doctor any cheaper. Oh, and here's another little tidbit that you may not be aware of. In the ACA, in the legislation, if the insurance company loses money, well, maybe not even loses money, but if they don't make profit up to a certain percentage, guess what? There is government subsidies available to bring their profit up to a minimum margin. And it increases year over year. And of course, we know who's going to pay for that, don't we? The government doesn't own anything that they haven't stolen from someone else first. And that's really the crux of the problem, isn't it? We talk about affordable care. Well, of course, it's affordable for Congress, because they're not paying for it. And of course, it's affordable for government employees because they're not paying for it. And of course, it's affordable for all those people up to 133% of the poverty level, which is $94,000 for a family of four, because, you guessed it, they're not paying for it. You and I are. And that's really the affordable part, isn't it? Of course, those people that find themselves in the position of having to pay for it are waking up very quickly to the fact that it's anything but affordable. Ask the good people down in Florida, over 300,000 of which have lost their insurance coverage. Talk to the people out in California. They're seeing their premiums rise by at least 33%. I'm sure they are right now, as I speak, holding hands and singing Kumbaya. I'm sure they're just in love with Obamacare right now. But it's going to get better as the program works itself out. And, of course, it's implemented right just in time for January. We all know what happens in January. Tax time. That's right, boys and girls. If you're not signed up for Obamacare by December 15th, come tax time, don't you worry your pretty little heads about it. That $95 fine that you're going to get, no, remember, that's 3% of your gross income. That's what the fine is. Read the fine print. 1% of your gross income times 3 dependents, that's the first year. The second year, it goes to 2.5%, which, if you do the math, is actually 7.5% of your gross income. Ladies and gentlemen, that's approaching what you're paying right now for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. That's right. And the third year, it goes up to 5%, which, guess what? That equates to 15%. Yep, sure looks affordable to me. And I see we've got Mr. Beasley in the chat. Beasley, welcome aboard. Anybody got any questions? You know the number. You're welcome to call in. It's 646-378-0321. And I put up a link in the chat earlier, and it's still up there. You can scroll back, which is the beginning of the end for the petrodollar, and that's just one of several articles that I've looked at in the last couple of days. If you were listening last week, I cut into Linda's show and cut into Mike's show Saturday with the information that Saudi Arabia is pretty miffed with us right now because of our handling of Syria and our handling of Iran. And not a moment too soon, I see the article came out today that Iran is just probably, 60 seconds away from having nuclear capabilities. They've been, 2 weeks away, 6 months away for the last 10 years. Now it's much more dire. Actually, the article claims that they're about a week away from having a nuclear weapon. So, of course, Israel is going to be stirred to saber-rattling instantly. And again, we have these strange bedfellows where we find Saudi Arabia siding with Israel. And I just find that a bit ironic when we're talking about, in the same breath, the petrodollar. Because those of you that followed my show, when I talked about the petrodollar and the rise of the petrodollar out of Saudi Arabia, that's right, in OPEC, boys and girls. And when was that? Oh, yeah, back in the 70s. You remember the gas crunch? You remember when the Saudis put an embargo on the United States? Why did they do that? Well, they were miffed at us because of our support for Israel in the Yom Kippur, the little war against Egypt. How ironic. And let's go back and remember what we were talking about the other day with Obama's language concerning Syria and the red line. Are you starting to see how this all comes together now? The Red Line Agreement is what divided up the Middle East after World War II and gave Saudi Arabia to the United States, gave Iran, which didn't exist prior to that, it was the Persian Empire or the former Ottoman Empire, gave that to the Brits, and we shared everything in between, which would be, Iraq, what's now the United Arab Emirates, Yemen, Kuwait, which didn't exist at that time. So here we are in 2013 with our sitting president talking about a red line being crossed in regards to actions in Syria. And I think that must have been his message to the Saudis that he was doing all he could, but he was under pressure. And I think he's also sending a message to the Brits that this is about the line agreement, and we have to, we've got to do something about Syria. That's the only thing that makes sense. That was a message that was being sent out not just for the soundbite over the airwaves. And it looks like we've got a caller, 925. I'm going to bring you in. 925, how are you, sir, or ma'am?
Good afternoon. It's Beasley. I didn't know that my number's appearing on these shows. I guess I have to be careful.
That's okay. I'm not giving away the whole thing, just your area code.
I'm not worried. Whatever.
Hey, how you doing, Brown?
I'm well. And yourself?
I've been better, but, you know, I've been worse.
You're still kidding. I read the article. The article's interesting. Of course, even the wise, intelligent people that wrote the article don't have the ability to predict the future. To the red line, he was definitely using coded language. Speaking to that, the whole structure of the Middle East can fall apart. But as you notice, that situation in Syria has come into our consciousness and left our consciousness, and no one's really talking about it that much anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of completely off the radar, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's really kind of strange how something like that can come on the radar and capture everyone's attention, okay? And everyone's discussing it. Now we're not even talking about that anymore. No one's really talking about it anymore.
Well, no, and it certainly looks like from the rhetoric I'm seeing that the shift is going to be going back to Iran.
Well, there seems to be a new, I don't know the leader's name, but it's not Ahmadinejad, and he seems
right.
to be speaking in a conciliatory tone, and there seem to be, you know, talks of talks, and, you know, Netanyahu is against it, saying this guy's a snake. I'm not as concerned about Iran having a nuclear weapon as maybe we've been stirred up to thinking.
Right.
I think many countries have nuclear weapons, including Pakistan, which is
sure.
An Islamic state. Well, it's run by Muslims. And nothing has happened there, and nothing has happened. I think anyone that knows now, I don't think a state or a nation would be responsible for a nuclear attack because it's simply going to mean worldwide annihilation, and it's going to be the end of everyone and everything if it happens. As soon as a missile or an attack goes off, there's going to be immediate responses. And I think anyone that has any – now, that doesn't mean some rogue group, you know, with some – you know, Masonic-type mission.
Like the United States government?
Hey, you know, anything is possible. Anything is possible. But most know that any use of these weapons is going to be answered by more weapons. And these are real weapons of mass destruction. I don't see the threat there as much as that we've been hyped up to believe it.
Oh, well, I don't either, and I think it's been a charade and one that's worked well for several years. But, you know, I pointed out quite some time ago on my show, if you could roll back the clock to 2005, 2006, and look at the World Bank website, you would see all the various things or areas in Iran that the World Bank was funding. New projects in Iran. And it wasn't until 2007 that somebody said, hey, don't you think we ought to take those pins off the map? And they did. The U.S. has been playing this footsie game over there in the Middle East for a very long time and well, bumbling about it at first. You know, you go back to the Muslim Brotherhood, and they were, you can trace the Muslim Brotherhood back to a single individual. And he was given his startup money by the British Suez Company.
Which tells you what? What does, what does that lead you to believe?
What it leads me to believe is that it is
controlled.
Yes,
right.
It's COINTELPRO, if you will.
Right.
They absolutely were using, the Brits created this entity, the Muslim Brotherhood, through this guy who was, for all intents and purposes, an atheist, dressing himself as a Muslim. He was schooled in Islam, but he was definitely an atheist, if you read the guy's history. And they used him and his little organization to counter the monarchy in Egypt, and because they were all worried that the Egyptians and the Muslims were going to go commie. That's the story, at least.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't buy that for a minute. They were playing politics, and that straight-up politics behind the scenes. And the CIA and the U.S. government got in bed with them when we took over supremacy from the Brits at the end of World War II. And we've been running that game ever since. You talk about Pakistan. Most all of the weapons and funds that have been run into these jihadists have been run through Pakistan and our own CIA. Just the other night I was talking about an article where they had diesel fuel that some contractor allegedly purchased in Afghanistan for $500 a gallon. Now, you and I both know that that's baloney.
Right.
You know where that money's going. That money is being rerouted. I think the people are being played. They're being played for fools. And I think that some of them now are beginning to wake up to that. You know, we've had this whole left-right paradigm that's been played for God knows how long, you know, since they had two damn parties. And you see coming out now that, oh, well, wait a minute, you know, this ACA, this healthcare thing was really the Republican brain trust of the likes of Richard Nixon, and the Heritage Foundation chimed in with their idea for the individual mandate. You know, they don't care who fleeces you. They just want to be the one in charge to take credit. But they want everybody to believe it's for your own good. It's in your best interest. They're just concerned for you, Brown Beasley.
Well, that's hard to believe. I don't believe that. No, and I agree with you as far as these, you know, polar opposite groups that are, you know, it keeps people completely divided, whether it be black, white, Democrat, Republican, for gay marriage, against gay marriage, one could argue that religions were created to keep people at odds with one another.
There has been a lot of talk about that, and you talk about this divide. It was so humorous to me yesterday. I had a progressive liberal just get livid with me. We were sitting at a bar watching a football game, and he'd made mention about the Redskins, which was his team, and he thought they needed to change the name because it was racist. And I looked
so
up.
Caught up into this. Go ahead.
I looked and I said, well, hey, wait a minute. I said, that team's got a black quarterback. The other team doesn't. They must be racist. And there was a black guy sitting next to me, busted out laughing, and this guy got pissed. And he got up and went clear down to the other end of the bar, wouldn't even talk to me. I was dumbfounded. I'm like, you can't be that damn childish. That's the most naive thing on the face of the planet.
The Redskin story is resonating. It's all over the place. People have strong opinions about that maybe not even care about football.
No, and then you get, you know, but you get Bob Costas on there. What a joke. I mean, the guy's a walking gas bag. It's ridiculous. And they're, you know, you can't say anything about anyone without being a racist or a bigot
or
a homophobe or whatever.
You can say anything you want to, and I think you might be a little bit more defensive if you're worried about offending someone.
Well, that's
true. You can say anything you want to, and people can be offended, and I don't buy that argument of what you can't do or what you can't say,
right?
Because you're afraid of being called a racist or this or that.
But it's not right. It's not a matter of that.
Let the cards. No, well, that's some social thing. If you feel what you feel, you say what you say, and you think what you think, and you shouldn't care that much about where the cards fall after that. It's almost there's a whole segment of society that feels like their rights are being infringed upon because they can't say something that's unpopular. That's exactly what freedom of speech is. It's not to protect popular speech.
It
was there to protect unpopular speech. So
precisely.
Unless
it's against the government, and then it's not protected.
Well, who knows what's protected these days?
Evidently not much.
I can tell you that there's reporters, young reporters, bloggers that are being arrested and charged with catching the heavy hand of the federal government. That these stories are not getting a lot of attention. I've become aware of them on BTR, and there's definitely attack on freedom of the press.
Oh, absolutely. I've just read this afternoon an article of a reporter from Alabama that was arrested and beaten because of what he's writing in his blog posts.
Right.
About a judge over in Alabama a guy with political aspirations for office, but he's from a wealthy banking family over there in Alabama, and he was carrying on a sordid affair with this woman, and the judge ruled him in contempt. He was arrested. They beat him up. It's crazy.
All it takes is a phone call from one person to the judge, or maybe he sees someone out at the golf club.
Oh, absolutely.
At the private golf club, and he's doing a friend a favor. That's the way it works.
Oh yeah, no, I understand, and you know it's crony capitalism. I experienced it firsthand here in our county GOP when I was a delegate, and you know I saw the way these scumbags operate, and we called them out on it. They don't like that when you do that.
No.
You know, I was a registered lobbyist down at the state. They didn't like that. By the time it was done, we had 179 registered citizen lobbyists. We had someone present at every one of their committee meetings, and they didn't like that. So they changed the rules and increased the fee to weed out most of the citizen lobbyists. You know, when you make it $500 to get a lobbyist badge, most guys lose interest. And the thing is, you don't have to have a lobbyist badge to go down there and do that, but you should see the way you're treated when you do have one.
Very good. That's all I wanted to add was comment on what you said.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the comment. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. And that was Mr. Brown Beasley. Anybody else have any comments or anything on your mind this week? You know, I think we'll probably see the rhetoric get ratcheted up on Iran. We already tonight, I was reading that there's been some kind of an attack in Yemen around or near our embassy there. So expect increased activity this week and in the coming weeks over in the Middle East. New civil unrest will raise its ugly head. I'm sure that, you know, Iran will be targeted in some of this, some way, you know, there'll be some Hamas assassination team or something. That'll be some plot that'll be uncovered. Probably a little more interesting than the one to assassinate the Saudi ambassador that got everybody's panties in a wad here about a year or so ago. But again, I find it interesting that you have the Saudis and the Israelis siding together. And the Saudis threatening to oust us and our petrodollar and they're siding with Saudi Arabia or with the Israelis, the very folks that they were angry that we were siding with all those many years ago when they started the oil embargo against us. So it's how the worm turns, you know. And Iran is, of course, one of Saudi's arch enemies. And the thing is that as part of that agreement, as part of that petrodollar agreement, the Saudis were understanding that what they were purchasing was, you know, muscle. Like, just like the mafioso, you know, they were buying protection by pegging their oil, their product, to the U.S. dollar. And it looks like we've got Miss Linda calling in from California. How are you, Miss Linda?
Fine, thanks, Ron. Hello to everyone in the chat room. You guys are great. I did do a little promo when I first got in. You know, I did some Facebook and Twitter and hopefully and Patriot Families. And so we got a good audience. And there's just so much going on. I can't keep up with it all. I'm so far behind. I just finally finished, I think it was yesterday, my week five of Hillsdale's online college course for Econ 101. And then, of course, today I have to go in and read the next one. But and then all your articles you're sending me, which are fantastic, especially when you deal with the health care and it goes back to Nixon, the HMOs, I mean, all the way down the line. And I heard Gerald Ford was no angel either. I mean, so the right-left paradigm is just what it is, bunk. It really is just such, you know.
I liked Gerald Ford better as Chevy Chase on Saturday Night Live than I did the real deal.
Oh, God. And the other one was the Petro one you just put up there about Saudis wanting to get out. That's the second one that I think you've sent me. I have not finished reading it, but I shall at the end of the show. Again, I've got all the stuff about the JFK assassination. There's stuff I've got to get done for my show. There was so much on the Internet today about not only the new stuff coming out, I think it was on 60 Minutes on Benghazi, that proves that these people were lying from the – I mean, actual proof now – you know, on a, quote, MSM media station, that these people were lying from the get-go and they just didn't care.
Do you really think, do you honestly think that anything will come of that? I certainly don't believe that anything will.
No. When you've got Soros, he's funneling millions for her campaign for 2016. I mean, you know, and that's on the second page. You know what I mean? Page two is, guess what? You're going to get this whether you want it or not. It's disgusting. I have no...
And to think for a moment that, you know, you're going to get anything resembling any kind of justice out of what happened in Benghazi or, you know, many other... I mean, go back and look through the history of our country. It doesn't matter who's in power, who the administration is. You go back to the whole sordid affair with the USS Liberty, the Gulf of Tonkin incident. I mean, we can go all the way back to the blowing up of one of our ships in the Savannah Harbor in Cuba to blame it on the Spanish, for God's sakes.
Well, you know, again, when you're dealing with the false flags, that was a discussion in the chat room just before I called in. Now we're dealing with, I think there was one in Northern California, and I don't remember the city because there were so many of them going on. But there was one with the sheriff. They were after somebody who clearly didn't look like this poor guy. They pulled over and put guns to his head, you know, standing outside of his car.
Well, that was out your neck of the woods.
Yes, and then this is up north, though. And then the other was even further north, and there was another stand. They were creating false flags, and they had, you know, saying that it was they're trying to go after these drug cartel people, and so they're locking down these entire areas because one cop was shot. I mean, they're dealing with these mini martial laws everywhere. This is frightening. They're doing it. I mean, and so this is what we're up against. And I explained to Rod in the chat room that what you have to do, and I don't know, you know, you've got to get your people awake, even in your groups, in your town, and you must go to your sheriff or your local police department and demand that they become oath keepers. and just say, we're not playing this game anymore. You better do it.
Well, and my question on that is, where are the Oath Keepers in all this? Because, obviously, we need numbers when things like this happen.
Yep.
And they need to make, I would like to see people put together some kind of response team, but I'll tell you what's going to end up happening. I watched a video today from the Alamo and the confrontation with the Texas Rangers down there of three protesters who were carrying black powder revolvers, which under the law are not recognized as a firearm. And yet they were arresting these guys. And, the crowd was getting very pissed, and there was a lot of, there was one or two guys in that crowd that were really trying to push the envelope, and I don't know how many, if those guys were there to try and help get people fired up to actually physically go after these cops, or if they were truly part of the group, because I've seen that as well. I remember years ago a video of some guys at a protest up in Canada, and a couple of guys walk up and start talking smack about, we ought to just crack their heads. Come on, let's go beat them up, talking about the cops.
Wow.
And the protesters are saying, hey, I don't know what you guys are talking about. That's not what we're about.
Right.
And then they get into it, and they're rolling around on the ground, and somebody said, hey, look at their shoes. And they were wearing boots, and they were the exact same boots that the cops were wearing. They were undercover. They were off-duty or undercover cops that were trying to stir up the people in the crowd to be confrontational. Sooner or later, one of these little incidents is going to turn into a full-blown disaster.
Tiananmen Square. The other thing that happened, and I can't remember the name of the city, but Glenn had it briefly on his show today on the TV, and he talked about this poor guy, his ex-wife or somebody's disgruntled, calling some authorities and saying, this guy's got a gun and he's not supposed to have it and all this nonsense. And they go in, they not only arrest him, terrified his whole family, and all he had was ammunition. D.C., there you go. Yeah, all he had was ammunition.
But it wasn't
registered ammunition? Are you kidding me?
Hey,
oh my God.
Let me tell you, that's not an infringement on his right to keep and bear arms. As long as it's registered, as long as you jump through all the hoops, that's what they would have you believe. That's why I said that's no different than, saying that forcing people to purchase a product from a private company is a free market solution. It's insanity.
My God. Oh, yeah, they covered that on my week 5 with Gary Wolfram, who's very brilliant. There's a lot of things I disagree with him on his ideas of constitutionality, but as far as free markets, he has read von Mises and Hayek, and that part he gets, and he's great on instructing. But there's no way that any of that's constitutional, nor are many of the things going on in California, which is like a 2.5-page, huge page, and I'll deal with on my show, what they're doing in California, and it's all about, CARB, the California Air Resources Board, and how they're putting a stranglehold on everybody, and they're getting worse and worse and worse with their EPA and their green machine. It's really frightening. So, anybody who thinks this, and I know where it's coming from. I mean, there was like two or three on Facebook today talking about Agenda 21. Full-blown, defend rural America, all of it. And, it was just phenomenal, so I kept putting it around to my people here who aren't quite on board. They need to know this. Some of these people have family farms here in Oceanside, and they need to know this stuff.
It's funny. That's another thing. You talk about farms out in Oceanside. Most of those farms wouldn't even be possible without government interference. you look, well, seriously, Arizona the same way. When you see the government, channeling water to places that were normally arid and desert, only in America can you have a huge farm out in the middle of a desert and say that it's a free market solution, because you got the taxpayers to foot the bill to pump water into your area. Now, I'm not saying anything bad about the people that have family farms in that area. You know, they probably came in after the water was already there, so they're just taking advantage of a resource that's at their disposal at that point.
But I'm looking at that big picture because you know how I've been, like 4.5 years I'm studying this stuff, and I know what their agenda is. They do not want you to have private property. They do not want rural anything. They want everybody herded into these cities eventually. And I mean, they're not even trying to hide it anymore. They're just, you know, oh, by 2050, we're going to do this. I mean, it's nuts. And it's blasted all over our papers here in San Diego. I'm like, my head's spinning over it because I know what they're trying to do. Now, my question is, okay, what if you had a real true free market system and you had something that was like the San Joaquin Valley, which, you know, they funneled the water from wherever, and now they took it off because of some Delta smelt, which is, to me, a big lie.
Right.
But the people like it. Could you not go ahead and feed that back to the free market and let private people do it?
Well, that's the thing. If it's a voluntary association whereby the property owners all along the canal way and everything and everybody's pitching in, I don't have a problem with that. Where I have a problem with it is when you involve government. And then it's done by mandate or by
dictate. Yeah, because once they give it to you, they can take it away. Right. Yeah. Once they give you something, they can take it away, and that's exactly what's happened. That's how it happened. They say,
Yeah, you know, I mean, the idea that government solves problems is ridiculous. The idea that we can vote our way out of this is also ridiculous.
Yeah. I know.
And I understand, and I'm looking partly at what's going on in the chat room, talking about, you know, race relations and entering into, you know, racial makeup over the actions of Obama. That's just one way in which we're being divided. Look, it's any port in a storm. You can go by race, you can go by sexual preference, you can go by gender, you can go by socioeconomic class. You can go by political affiliation. How many different ways do you want to be divided? The point is that rather than falling for the bait that they throw out there, not to fall for that bait and look at it as a whole. What it is they are degrading people, and they are trying to get that reaction from people. I don't know what his personal feelings are one way or another, other than what he wrote in his book. And I would tell you that what he wrote in his book, I wouldn't trust that either, because it's all about an agenda, and that agenda is to keep us divided. If we ever all got together and said, hey, you know what, guys? The ones that are screwing us is the government and the banks.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, too big to fail, it means that, you know, look at how much money the banking sector donates to the political cause. You're talking about a presidential race that was $7 billion.
Good God. Oh, my God.
$7 billion.
That's unheard of.
The lion's share of that money is coming from the banking class. And then to have the Democrats decry the Supreme Court ruling that corporations are to be treated as persons when it comes to campaign contributions, and they're up there just screaming bloody murder like they don't get huge swaths of money, more so 5-1 over the Republicans if you want to fall into that division of left and right. It's just, it's unending.
My take on the divide is I'm not a bigot, because when I look at Hildebeest, I mean, the chick's got blonde hair and white skin, okay. The other one has darker skin and black hair, and now it's turning gray. But you know what color I see? And one's male, and well, sort of. I don't know with those two. But I just see red with gold, sickle, and hammer, because that's what they are. That's where my division comes in. I want the Constitution. I don't like communism. And I don't care what color you are.
And, you know, like I explained in my blog post, the majority of them believe that we do have the Constitution. However, it's the Constitution under the reading of the idea of Rousseau and Hobbes, and that is the collective is we the people,
yep.
And it's not an individual thing. Why do you think you get some jackass like Piers Morgan coming out and saying that the Second Amendment was horribly written? Well, he's a complete moron. The only reason, and you look at the explanation that they try to give for the Second Amendment. Okay, those in government that are against the Second Amendment, what do they tell you? They tell you that the Second Amendment was purely meant for the militia. Okay, transform the word militia to collective because that's what they're talking about. When
right.
in reality, they are correct on a technical point. The whole purpose of the Second Amendment was that the militia was the armed defense for a free state because
right.
the Constitution forbids a standing army. So the
right.
militia was the standing army in each state, and it was all free men, right?
Right, and they weren't organized.
And you were required, you were required to own a firearm.
Right.
But
well,
see,
that's true because
we transpose this, we twist it.
Yes.
We
alter
the meaning of words to the point that, well, they didn't mean individual people. They meant for the collective. Kind of like they do in Switzerland, you know, where nobody takes their guns home. They all leave them in the lockers at the YMCA.
Oh, God.
I mean,
yeah,
you know,
right.
whatever.
But, you know,
it's just
look,
ridiculous.
There was a story, you know, back in the 1800s, I think it was 1850 or something like that. And the story goes, and it was this particular one was done by David Barton, and it was some two-room schoolhouse, and some dude with a rifle was pretty ticked off at the guy who was doing the teaching that day, and he stormed in and wanted to kill the teacher. And so the kids turned around and all pointed their own guns at him and said, "No, we like this teacher. You need to leave." It was hysterical. Kids have them, too. I mean, it was not a big deal. They hunted, they fished, they, you know.
Well, sure,
themselves.
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, and of course, the progressives are going to tell you, yeah, but that was a different time, and that was just a way of life, and things have changed, and we've progressed past that now.
Yeah, right. No,
and I've got another caller. I've got another caller I want to bring up, and this is a local call, 678, so we're going to bring them on. 678, how you doing?
I'm doing good, but actually I'm just listening, host. I didn't have any comments.
Okay, no problem. I'll put you back on quiet.
Appreciate that.
Okay.
All right, well, anyway, sorry about that, Linda. Go ahead.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah, it's just funny because, no, what they're doing is that, you know, the progressives, when I've heard people say that to me, I've had friends who are Democrats say that to me, and I go, no, things haven't, the only thing that's changed is technology. Human nature does not change because the man who's still in charge up there on the throne has not changed humans, and he ain't gonna. So you stupid progressives ain't gonna change us either. They're so, it's like the arrogance, the hubris, I don't know. They're so Nimrod-y, you know, they're so Nebuchadnezzar. They're gonna build that damn tower no matter what, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely.
God.
Wow, I see a mention in the chat room of slavery reparations. Oh, my goodness. You know, we did that already back after the Civil War and in the Reconstruction Acts in 1868, 1872. It's just crazy.
Oh, my God.
And, no, I don't fit. Who are you going to repatriate or... Who are you going to pay off?
Reparate.
The descendants of these people? I think, well, I won't go there. I think a good number of them are already getting a free ride.
Oh, they're getting plenty.
And there was
plenty
of, you know, 40 acres and a mule going around. Look, this country's never been perfect. I'll absolutely agree with
Lord.
You there. And, you know... We didn't get rid of slavery. We just we socialized
it. Monetized it.
We monetized it, and we've incorporated it. So, you know, pretty much everybody's a slave on the plantation today. in this country, unless, of course, you're one of the elected elite class, and then, of course, you're exempt.
Sure. Yeah, that's the oligarchy.
Much like going to Brussels. You move to Brussels if you're clever enough to get elected to office. You're tax exempt. You don't pay any taxes. Otherwise, everybody else does. You know, God we trust, all others pay cash.
Sure. Just like, every other monarchy has been that way. I mean, who's collecting it? The king's collecting it, you know. And
truly.
So we just have a whole bunch of little kings up there in the District of Columbia or the District of Criminals, you know. And they're raping and pillaging just like some of the old warlords. Aren't they?
Absolutely. And you know, I would argue, you know, that you've got people that are benefiting from the slave labor here in America right now. I don't know what you call it when you go to work and only get half of what you're contracted to be paid, but I know what I call it, and it's not, free contract and a free market.
It's plunder, and it's like you better have your own little jar of Vaseline around your neck because you're going to need it.
I don't know how many folks we have that are on Patriot Families, and I don't know if you saw that little blog clip that I put up the other day, but I just, you know, there's some things you just can't make this stuff up, and I read that and I'm like, are you flipping kidding me? A PDF file from the government healthcare, right? The healthcare.gov, and it says, no, this document includes data from plans in the federally facilitated and state partnership marketplaces, blah, 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 pulled from federally facilitated states and from, get this, the System for Electronic and Rate Form Filing, or SERF.
Oh, my God. Oh, God. Oh,
S-E-R-F-F.
Really...
I mean, I said, now remember, folks, if you've got any questions at all, you can call 1-800-F1-UCKYO. Because that's the 800 number.
You know what? It's amazing. They are so rubbing our noses in this. I mean, this is like daily now. And it's I don't know what the end game is, but... or what the end result's going to be. But when you look at things like Common Core and Agenda 21 and what they're doing and all the stuff with amnesty, in fact, this Thursday we're all going to go down to ICE's office and just have a field day bitching at him about his amnesty plan because we're not buying it anymore. There's nobody rich enough to go up against him on the conservative side, although I wish there were. But, you know, everything that they do to us, it just keeps coming down the pike. We're just in an onslaught. It's scary.
I understand.
When you look at, I keep seeing this word everywhere I go in the newspaper about the Green Agenda and all these other stupid programs since they've been doing the evil alphabet soup programs. And they talk about unintended consequences. When it comes to Agenda 21, there is nothing unintended about their endgame. Their intentions are wearing horns and tails, let me tell you. That's what I see. This is not unintended by any stretch, because I don't trust any of them.
No, I don't either. And, you know, you look at what went on under Bush, what went on under his father,
sure.
What went on under Clinton.
And Cheney.
You know, this perpetual war is very profitable.
Oh, yeah.
Hasn't been discontinued because, as Smedley Butler said, war is a racket. And it's a damn profitable one if you can get it. And that's exactly what's going on. So, you know,
it's
for
sad.
Me, I look to the future, the next few days or few weeks. I think we're going to see increasing rhetoric towards Iran. We might see Syria back in the news. You know, anything is possible at this juncture. You know, who knows? Maybe we'll wake up tomorrow morning to find out that the U.S. Embassy in Yemen has been demolished and it was, Iranian Hamas suicide bombers that pulled it off. I don't know. Nothing would surprise me at this point. I think that the administration, no matter who's up there, whether it's Obama or Bush or Clinton, I think they're going to do anything and everything they can to continue supporting the petrodollar arrangement with the House of Saud. And, you know, this is one of my things that if and I know I'll probably get hate mail for this one, but if Obama just wanted to outright destroy the United States, he would give the Saudis the middle finger.
Yep. Yep.
He would
absolutely.
He would just give them the middle finger and say, you know what, we don't need you, so just go pound sand. You go play with your Israeli buddies over there, and you guys do whatever you want. And he may even come out and say, but I'll tell you what, if you preemptively attack Iran, we're going to level you. Now, that would be, I'm just telling you, that would end the United States. But that's not going to happen. That's just not going to happen.
So what if the House of Saud, they decide they don't want to play our game anymore? I mean, they are free to do that, are they not?
Well, certainly they're a sovereign nation. And, you know, if they think that they can snuggle up and get adequate protection from the Soviets and China, or from Russia and China, mm-hmm. if they feel comfortable enough, and that's one of the things that I saw growing out of this larger consortium of the G20, the BRICS nations, you know, you're getting enough political clout there that you can actually, they can start to put pressure on the United States, and I think that's what you're going to see happening. I think that's going to continue, and when the dollar, if they get a decoupling of the dollar, it's just a matter of time. It would mean one of two things. I mean, you know, and I think inevitably what it means is that the United States becomes more isolationist, or, as I've said before, it may just be that they roll out a new reset.
Yeah, they could. Yeah, who knows? Okay, are you running out of time?
Yep, just about out of time, guys. And
okay, I'm going to let you go, and thanks so much. It was great. Fabulous show, and I'm going to go read that article. Okay, see you guys tomorrow.
All right.
Thanks. Love you all. God bless.
God bless. And, you know, I'm glad everybody tuned in tonight. Beasley, I'm glad you were here. We had a lot of lively chat going on in the chat room, and I think that perhaps we're starting to maybe get a little more understanding of one another. And one of the key things that I think we need to be aware of is not to be reactionary. And I know it's aggravating, and I know Beasley likes to come across as being supportive of Obama, and perhaps that's genuine in some instances. I don't know anything that I can put a finger on that he's done that I would support, but I don't really follow him that close. I do follow Congress. I do follow what they have done and what they are continuing to do. And this is one of the things I keep telling people. It's not so much the president as it is the daggum Congress. Congress is the one that passes law. All the president can do is sign it or veto it. So without that 535 members, you don't get any of this stuff. And it's a two-way street. Both sides have been playing this game. You know, what you have in this Affordable Care Act is primarily a Republican plan from 30 years ago. So, I mean, you know, can we get past all of the left-right paradigm, all the partisan bickering, the racial bickering, and let's focus on putting the fire under the feet of those that should be held responsible, regardless of what party they're in. That's the point. And not falling for all the division. And, you know, hopefully cooler heads prevail. And I thank everybody for tuning in. We've got my good buddy Bill, Mr. Brown Beasley, FT, Linda, Lonnie, Into Knowledge, Miss Yola, or Mr. Nick, sitting in for Miss Yola, and my phantom caller or listener on the in the chat in the studio. Guys, God bless you. Thanks for tuning in. And let's keep pushing, but we've got to push in the right places. And we've got to keep our heads about us. And, you know, this can be done, and it can be done without acts of violence. That's the main thing. The best way is to stop participating. You know, we've talked about this before. End your support. Stop sending them money. That's what they understand more than anything else. Stop sending them money. Stop sending money to their campaigns. My God, how many of you get at least 10 emails a day asking you for money from this campaign or that campaign or this think tank or this group over here? Tell them, you know what? You're on your own, but I don't think we're going to get it done through the ballot box. I really don't. We're going to have to make them hurt. And the way we do that is cut off their money. Stop feeding the beast. That's the way we win. Thanks, guys. God bless. And we'll see y'all tomorrow for the Hoot and Holler. Good night.